Musky pressure. Trolling headlocks. Musky pressure. I wanna tighten. Musky pressure. Working jerk baits. Musky pressure. 360 podcast. Musky pressure. Burning bucktails. Musky pressure.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Jay Bird, what do you think of Freddie Mercury outboard Palmero?
I just stopped laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you sent me that. It's a masterful mix, number one. I think you did a great job with that. I think my recording of him is spot on. It's not hard to capture the intense vocal ability of Freddie Mercury outboard Palermo. But I think I did a pretty good job. And, I mean, he's just a flawless performer.
Voice of a generation, folks.
Voice of an angel.
Voice of an angel. Good Lord, man. I'll tell you, it is craziest stuff for like the last week and a half. If you guys are out today, pretty much a whole big section of the country got hit with big rains today. It is the most up and down fishing I have seen in forever. Like forever of just feast, absolute feast or famine. Just unreal, where it is just the worst you've ever seen, or it is absolutely on fire. So one thing I was going to say, just, and we covered live bait the other day, but man, if you are just struggling and it is just the end all be all, or you're post frontal right now, it really seems like that's going to be the ticket anywhere else. I know you guys are working on some colder temps, but for you guys that are in my neck of the woods or mid south or, you know, some of the middle states, man, it's just a up and down roller coaster, just an absolute roller coaster. You know, the weather right now, we went from 70s out of, so it was like, you know, 50s and 40s to 70s to back to 40s, just shockingly shifting weather.
You know, 40s is brutal for you guys.
Well, it's a little early for it to just be settled in. You know, you'll get that, you know,
right.
40s in the morning or this, that, or the other, you know, and it's mild. I mean, it's not warm by any means, but, you know, you'll get like your midday peaks and all this stuff. It is like 31 and a high of 44, you know, just right there sort of neck and neck with you guys in some regard, not that far off. And then here's these wild swings, dude. I mean, like, yesterday it was 72.
Ooh.
Right? And today it started and it was like high 60s, got up to 70s, and it just fell off a cliff. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's the day starting at, you know, high 60s and ending at 40. So it is violent mood swings. And I'll tell you, I've had some really good success in the last 7 days and some dismal failures. And the difference between putting them in the bait or in the boat or not is ended up just flat being live bait. I hate to say it, but you know, to get them, I mean, I'm seeing them coming on electronics, seeing them come in and do their thing. And you go, man, they got to eat. And they're just so on the cusp. But when it's that violent, you know, when the weather and the condition is just swinging so violently, if you're not there prefrontal, you're going to be in trouble. So just a little housekeeping there, just to throw that out. Jay, big fun stuff coming up. The black,
yeah, there sure is.
The blackest of Fridays.
it's going to be the opposite of a dark day next week.
It is the blackest of Fridays. Just Black Friday.
Yeah, we're going to have our huge annual Black Friday sale. It's going to start next Wednesday, and it's going to run all the way through that, what they're now calling Cyber Monday, which is the 29th. Mm. So there's a handful of days there in case you're on the road for Thanksgiving and whatnot and not able to get your shopping done in one day. Obviously, we expanded it out, so you've got several. And we're going to have a lot of cool stuff going on. So there's a lot of discounts on various categories and shipping and everything. Stay tuned. We'll be announcing everything next Wednesday.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yeah. It's a great year to get your Christmas shopping done early.
Get it done early. As you've heard me say before, if you need it now, you better buy it, you know? And so that is a good indication.
Yeah.
When it comes to whatever sales I've got going on. So yeah, and I already saw like one of the questions, I was pulling them over and a guy asked about like shield rods and all that stuff. Everything's still delayed. You know, friggin' Titans are on their way. Welcome to the funsies of try to get something through a port here. So that is just the nature of the beast. So yeah, the Black Friday stuff will be cool. I know we're working on a bunch of stuff. Speaking of working on though, mm-hmm. Pretty excited. Bill from Slammer painted up. I was shocked. Steve Paul custom Slammers.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah, it's a Steve Paul edition custom Slammer coming for 2022.
Hello. It's called SP Tiger.
SP Tiger. You know who named it.
I hear you. And there you go.
I did.
Jay Bird. That was me. Get it, the yep. SP yep. Tiger. It's a good.
It's your favorite pattern. And me and Jim, the Tube Screamer Stewart, we talked with Bill Schwartz, who's very accommodating with new ideas. Mm-hmm. And we got some great new custom colors coming in addition to the customs we already have.
Right. But it's cool. It's like when it comes to baits for me, it's black and more black. You know, so, but it's actually, sure. You guys can see it. I don't know if it's on, if any pictures up yet, but it's a black belly, black sided slammer with some silver accents, which is totally up my alley because you talk about versatility. It's going to work just about anytime you need it to work. And
it's, yeah, sometimes, you know, like Spinal Tap once said, it just can't be black enough, you know what I mean? And there isn't a lot of that on the market and they work for a reason. You know, the old timers always said, you know, any color is good, unless, you know,
as long as it's black.
As long as it's black,
dude. That's the thing. Like,
and it holds true sometimes. I mean, think about bucktails,
dude.
You know, the old black nickel. I mean,
yeah. When I was doing the original patterns for the Titan, right, mm-hmm. which you guys will see hopefully in the next time you get on the website, the pics will be up. It'll be very shortly.
Cool.
Like we've got the collar samples. Jay's seen some of like the finished stuff, and so. We're just waiting on the boxes to show up from Livingston. But yeah. We've got, like I said, we've got the actual production stuff done, so you'll be able to see pictures here soon. But I just said, we're going to do one that's all black. Like, black. Like, everything is black. No, like, extra little bit of this. No extra, just friggin' black. I can't.
Yeah, right.
And so that the cool thing with Bill there at Slammer, did a bait that's primarily black with just a little bit of silver accent, and it's just like, When I'm just looking, I'm just trying to get something cooking, man. You can't go wrong there. So it's a cool little bait there. So check out the SP Tiger.
Yeah. Well, look for it soon.
Oh. When do they come out? When are they?
The catalog is going to come out. Our annual catalog comes out in late January, and mm-hmm. I'm primarily working on that, and it's coming along good.
Well,
so
I was asking when are the SP Tigers available? When are the new colors?
Well,
at the
same time or shortly before that, I'm sure we'll get them in January. But I didn't tell you this. It was, I think, 2 days ago. I think it was Monday. Young guy came in, and actually Freddie Mercury, Paul Merrill, mm-hmm. The outboard, was working. And younger guy came in, and he ended up buying this a custom 10-inch slammer minnow bait, the shallow diving one. Mm-hmm. Took it out. Half an hour later, he's back, like still shaking. He got an absolute
monster.
Super, super monster. Just, just up the road. He went to a very nearby lake by our shop and brought the pictures in for Freddie and thanked him. He's like, hey, that bait worked. Check this out. You know, it's like, holy crap, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, the thing, he's barely down the road. That's funny, dude. That's not the way it usually works, but man, when it does, it's cool, you know.
So. Well, yeah, he was so happy. I mean, it was just like, hey, that's the only reason I was out there. That's the only reason the Tube Screamer's going out pretty much every day for at least a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. in this last week, you know, yeah. is for that one bite.
Yep.
That one fish.
Jim got a heck of a fish a few days ago.
Yeah, over the weekend he got a real fat, fat musky trolling.
What was that on, Grandma?
It was on a 9-inch Grandma, yep.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong there. I mean, that late season trolling with the way your temps are, and what's the last water temp you've seen, or what was Jim trolling in?
It's 40-41 or something like yeah. that. I might be a little bit off there. I can't remember. It's been kind of up and down. It's been really cold the last few days, but ice. We have no ice issues, unlike. Yeah, some places I heard Vermilion is starting to ice up, and guys are having trouble getting out. So, hey, we're ice free right now at the moment.
It's coming.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be 40 degrees on Saturday. So, right. You know, if you're not deer hunting, we have our gun deer opener this Saturday. It's a big deal in Wisconsin. So, you know, quite a few people that musky fish don't deer hunt, and it's a great time to be on the water.
Yeah, there's nobody.
It really is. There's huge ones caught every gun deer opener. I mean, just super tankers.
I'm not into shooting the deerts, you know. it's just like mm-hmm. I don't know. It's awesome because that's sort of like the end all be all when people are deer hunting. You can definitely just have the place to yourself, which is cool.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
But anyway, goodness gracious. And the other thing coming up, got the deep dives coming here, folks.
The deep dive series, yeah. That's
just,
right.
Just in a few weeks, we're working on them. So what these are going to be, just basically some of the stuff we talk about in the podcast, we're going to have videos of where it's a little bit more in-depth with that visual representation. So we're going to do some stuff like trolling and goodness, what do I got here? What trolling, jigging, how to work all this different stuff. If you have anything that you want to see visually, like tutorials, shoot us an email, and we're going to do those over the winter here.
Yeah, please do.
And so you'll get some video content on the Musky Shops thing of like, here's how to do this, here's how to do that. Mm-hmm. So can't go wrong there, eh? Goodness.
No.
It's almost good. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Jay? That's the question.
Driving down to southern and southwestern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Visit some family. Exciting. Looking forward to it. Couldn't do it last year, so looking forward to it.
Exciting. Well, we're going to do a couple questions because I still feel like crap. If anybody doesn't know, I've been like feeling rather crummy this week. So I'm phoning it in, folks. Phoning it in. Jay says, thanks for all the great info. It's really appreciated. Between episode 79, Musky Patterns, and episode 104, Structure Masterclass, have helped me understand seaweed movements and locations a great deal. However, I'm wondering about crankbait applications in relation to structure and what direction of a cast and retrieve is most effective in relation to a musky's location on the structure itself, specifically break lines, casting inside out, laterally or on the inside. Da, da, da. Thanks, Steve. Looking forward to fishing. Okay, he's going to actually, Jason, I have a trip coming up in July. Anywho, it's all about what that really distills down to is okay. So if you're fishing smart, which means your seasonality is right, your structural read is correct, and that might be structure in relation to cover or in conjunction with cover. Maybe not. Maybe it's just pure structure. What's the right cast? Okay. The right cast is going to usually be dictated by current, if there is any, wind movements, right? It's sort of what's going on with the flow of the lake. So I've said previously in other episodes that, you know, muskies have an expectation of where the forage should be coming from, right?
No doubt.
A lot of times, you can sort of exploit, say, in a cold front. I mean, I just had, now I say this with a caveat, I just had a cold front just demolish me that I just was insurmountable. But in general, you know, baits moving out of the depths to shallow during that daily movement in a cold front. So a lot of times you can catch a muskie he's sort of pointed out towards the deep. And if you throw towards the deep and bring it towards him, that's what he's expecting. You're sort of a lot of times just trying to deduce the best strategy on how you're going to present to a spot. With that being said, the water conditions, whether it be current or whether it be wind involved, is also going to dictate your boat control. But if all things are perfect, you want to really just set yourself up for where the forage is coming from. So if I move, mark a nice piece of structure and there's adjacent forage, I want to throw towards the forage and bring it in towards where I think the fish would be. Right. But then again, I mean, how many times do you pull into a spot and you go, you know, I understand, you know, all three elements I just talked about. If you understand all three of those, you might make that magical cast, but a lot of times you got to do it all. Right. You still have to put the cast in and sort of get through that spot and be effective. So I would recommend just doing it all. You know, what you just can't go and say they're definitely. I mean, there's times you can where you go, the muskies are at 10 feet and I need to throw out to the channel and bring it in, or out to the open water and bring it in. I'm going to get him. You better be real dialed in for that. And it does happen. However, it's always smart to sort of cover all of it. Right.
Yeah. So
the lateral cast, the casts in shallower, the casts out deeper. I mean, and with that being said, that's something that gets left on the table, I think, more so than anything, is a legitimate pass on a break line while throwing towards deeper water. Right. I think a lot of people, if they're not landing right next to the shore, or right next to some weeds, or right next to this, that, or the other that's shoreline related, get a little sketchy.
Yeah, well, for sure.
You know, so that's the one thing I think that probably those are the fish that are left that don't get pestered at all are going to be those sort of structurally suspended fish, or they're sort of sitting out over that, but. You know, there's not a great answer for do this, pinpoint this area, and this is the perfect cast. But at times, all the conditions will tell you that those are the right casts to make. You just have to assess what's going on there. Oh, goodness.
Well, yeah, I fished with you a lot over the summer in July and into early August, and I noticed we were doing that a lot. You know, and I brought it up several times about, you know, parallel casting, because predominantly where perpendicular stuff with structure, like you were just talking about when you said mix it up, it's just like we had the luxury of usually having three or four people in the boat, so one or two guys can fish out perpendicular with structure and bring it in, and that worked quite often, but the majority of the action was throwing in and over, you know, cover and bringing it towards the boat, again, perpendicular, but the whole parallel thing didn't seem to be something that's utilized a whole ton when we're fishing that way. Well, would you agree?
No, it depends on the bite. I mean, if they're tight into weeds, and I'm not even saying shallow weeds, just tight into a weed edge, you know, paralleling, that's going to keep you in their face or get you closer more so than not. I think it's just situational. You know what I'm saying? Going to be really, really situational. But with that being said, is what the trip you're referring to, there's a lot of fish that were caught on that outside cast too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just thinking fishing solo.
Mm-hmm.
I do this a lot when I'm fishing by myself. I will fish parallel with the deep weed line.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? And it's just like, it seems like the bait, it seems like you're covering more water. It's almost like two people are fishing when you're working that. If you want the bait to be down at a, you know, 9 foot, right where that, you know, weed edge ends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
that's something, and again, mix it up.
If you're working solo, there's three casts there. If you're working off the nose of your boat, you need to throw in, you need to throw straight ahead of the boat, and you need to throw out. You know, and it needs to be, you know, I'll usually make that first cast in towards, say, the shallow cover. And that's the first. And then the second one's the parallel. Mm-hmm. And the third's out. And until you're dialed in, if you find that those fish, if you get lit up on that outside cast, you might even reposition the boat, or you might just start pounding that outside cast. But don't go through a spot or a structural element and just go, I'm throwing at that one break, or I'm throwing at this one area.
Yeah, and that's another thing to be said about slow boat movement too when you're trying to cover, especially if you're fishing by yourself.
Right. Yeah.
So that boat's got to be going. You know, otherwise you're missing a lot of areas in a good section.
Well, you know, if you're trying to dial in, if you're trying to find that location that day, you have to do that. Like you said, slow it down as far as your boat control and everything so you can get three casts off that are relatively in the same area. You know, I mean, that's one thing too. Fishing solo, if you're fishing solo, is if you've got a spot that you feel good about it, do multiple passes. You know, you see a lot of guys that, like, they do one drift or one pass on stuff, and they feel inconvenienced that they might have to pull the troller and motor back to the start of it, you know? But you miss. I mean, you're missing. You know, if you got wind behind you or waves behind you, you're going to miss a majority of that place that you made the effort to get to.
Yeah.
You know, so milk it for what it's worth. Make sure you get some good casts in there. Adam says, got a 9-foot St. Croix Legend tournament series rod. I wasn't careful when I was traveling and managed to chip some paint off of it. Any tips? Lost some paint, Jay.
What area of the rod has paint damage, I wonder?
Well, my knee-jerk thing is if there's like a paint chip or, you know, he scratched it and some paint came off, some nail polish would probably keep it from going any further.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to – it's not like a lure where you start to flake paint off from hookware or maybe catching a fish where it, you know, took some of the – a bit of the finish off. You're getting hookware, and then the paint starts to flake or explode off after that.
Right.
I don't think with rods I've never really seen that be an issue. Hopefully it's down low. You know, it's like near the foregrip or something, and that's just probably just a cosmetic deal, and I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, if it's just cosmetic or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if it's deep and there might be some, you know, structure damage, but it sounds like it's just a little chip.
You know, if it's just a chip and you're worried about it chipping more, a little super, just a dab of super glue or some nail polish remover, keep it from chipping.
Yeah, try that. Yeah, why not?
Or, Jay, you just spray paint the entire thing fluorescent orange.
Oh, man, have you ever done that?
No, hell no. I wouldn't spray paint a rod orange. Actually, I say that. Jody's got one of these ugly freaking bass rods that's like hot orange. Like all the bass rods now are like goofy. Some of them, not all of them, but they make like these goofy like colored rods and stuff.
Oh yeah, like all white and stuff like that. Just, yeah, they got to stand out. Well, she's a kayak expert, Jody Michael is.
Yeah, so she's rolling around with her orange friggin' rod. Anyway, Ian, how do you deal with heavy wind? Wind that's in excess of 15 miles an hour or wind that's creating big chop. How are you really getting good boat control? How are you able to get casts in this time of year? Okay, it is windy a lot of places.
You know, yes,
it is. You get some of your plain states, dude, like your Indianas and your Iowas. I mean, you know, it can get blowing, you know, pretty crazy. Let's go ahead and take spot lock off the table then. Right. So if you got spot lock on your trolling motor, you just hit the spot lock button, right? Moving on. Which is nice. And then, you know, what I've done with it, Jay, you've been on the boat when I've done this, is like get the nose of the boat into the wind, spot lock it, then let off. You know what I'm saying? You spot lock, drift 3/4 of what you're casting, and then do it again and do it again. If you don't have spot lock in your trolling motor, literally anchoring. Physical anchors, old school anchors, are going to get you where you want to be. Okay. It's the same scenario. You're just going to drop your anchor and fish it the way that you do spot lock. You got to watch out though for fish getting into the anchor line. Been there, done it. I've lost fish on anchor lines before. Like it was, that sounds like something would happen in the 1800s, Jay. Drop the anchor. I mean,
how many fathoms of line did you have out?
Oh, easily 700 fathoms. I was fishing the Marianas Trench for muskies. You know, I did because I'm lazy would be have a really long rope and just feed some more rope out and just drift down from it. And then motor back up and get it. You know, hell, I mean, I've fished in creeks with friggin' cinder blocks, dude. Like, here's my cinder. Check the cinder block. So that's going to be number one. Number two is just sitting there and wailing on your trolling motor all day long. Obviously, you got a foot control. You can sit there and do it. That or just good boat positioning and ride the drift and just keep doing it. Those are the ways you can contend with that.
Well, I know my answer, but my question to you would be, at what point is too much wind? What, you know, where it's just like, okay, I'm not being effective at all. Time to find a calmer area. I mean, waves crashing over the front.
Talking when we're in Minnesota. Dude, yeah. We went over to that one point and we knew there
couldn't fish. Yeah.
We knew there were fish on it. We actually side scanned like a huge pack of walleye. There's dudes that were trying to get in there and fish walleye. And I'm sitting here going, we're banging 3 foot, right? We're rocking up and down 3 foot solid. There's some 4 footers in that shit. I'm out then. You know what I'm saying? It's just like in my younger years, if I was like thinking, yes, that is it. Would I have done it? Yeah. Is it the most effective thing ever? No. But I mean, if you know there's fish on it and it is just like do or die, you can do it. I take no responsibility for how you fare, but you know, I mean, it's just like me and Booker have talked about before, standing there with a freaking tiller between your legs and you know, holding the boat with your knees and casting. I've done it. It's dangerous. It just depends on what you want to do. To me, it's like, if it's banging that hard, you better have a real good reason about 50 inches worth. You know, I mean, it better be worth my time. That's when I sort of go, because there's when there's big winds and banging and heavy chop and spray and all that stuff, there's going to be fish that are feeding where that's hitting. But you can find those slack places. You know, you can get into those areas that are a little bit more calm that will have some fish left into them. But yeah, I just draw the line anymore to 3 foot. I mean, I got 3 foot and I'm out. I don't care. Well,
like you said, not necessarily. Earlier I said waves crashing over the front, but like you said, spray coming into the boat. If there's any spray coming into the boat from, you know, getting whacked on the side or towards the front, you know, under the bow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's too much. It's kind of dangerous and you can't be effective. I don't care.
I'm here to have fun.
Here we are.
If it's not fun anymore, I don't want to do it. But you can get out there and be a hero. I promise you. I mean, you catch fish. It's just a matter of how much suffering do you want to do. I would say this. I'll get out in some gnarly, gnarly stuff as long as it's a mid-sized body of water, though. You know, if you're on a friggin' leech or a vermilion or eagle or whatever, where that might just be the hors d'oeuvre to what's coming. That, you know what I'm saying? That's sort of the way I think about stuff anymore. Well, these threes could get bigger fast.
Yeah. You know, the whole Mille Lacs thing, it's just like, I mean, it's a small ocean and it's just like, when that wind changes and there's something coming and they're forecasting over 20 mile an hour winds, it's going to get bad in a hurry.
It's just risk and reward. I mean, you know, if you're crazy enough, good luck to you and you can do it. But, you know, that's sort of draw the line. But, you know, just dealing with those winds. If you feel like those spots are going to produce, you got the tools. You got your spot lock. You got your anchors. Get in there and grind them. Chris, I live in Portland, Oregon, and I fish tiger muskies mainly on Merwin. I've been there. I've fished it. I grew up in Minnesota and fish, and he said, I've fished muskie all over the state along with Wisconsin. He's part of a club up there. He seems like nobody's fishing tigers in the winter. He said, kokanee fishing, you know, is happening, you know, fish are all the way down to 70 feet. I'm paraphrasing here. Any advice on how to get tigers to eat in colder water temps, these 56 degrees, low 50s? Can't use live bait there. Okay. One thing I would look at, Chris, and I'm not sure because they're invasive, and this is, I'm just throwing it out. I would look and see if you can use a squawfish. Okay. I'm not sure if you're allowed to fish with a squaw fish, but that I would call your DNR in check. Merwin's full of them suckers.
What's that lake like?
What's that lake like?
Big reservoir?
Yeah, they're reservoirs. They're insanely deep. They're clear. Let me pull this up. I want to make sure I got them right because there's two. I want to see the map because I'm going to give this guy an actual spot if I can remember. There's two lakes and I get them cooked up.
Well, that's interesting you said that, too, because I've heard that before about those western reservoirs with tigers. It's like when the water temp gets below a certain degree, they get really tough to locate and get to bite.
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking here. So this is Special Bay. Is this the one? Hold on. Let me see if this is the one with the lodge on it. It's been a minute here. Bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be sure. Lake Merwin. Okay. I know. Big exciting conversation. It's the most exciting talk here. Ever. When I'm not talking, I'm trying to figure something out just to be sure. Okay. So, right there at that ramp, and I'm looking at which ramp. I want to give this guy, because hell, was it matter at this point? Okay. There's Yale Bridge, right? It would be... I believe it is at Woodland Park, okay? And I could be completely wrong. There's a ramp on the side. Them suckers were stacked on the concrete on the ramps. There's a little back bay at the ramp, and I'm trying to help this. Bear with me, folks. I don't get to talk about any of the Western stuff here too much. That's what sucks, Jay, on the friggin'. I'm on my desktop. Right? And yeah. I can't get the friggin' satellite. I want to see it like a satellite where I can see the actual overview. Anyway.
Oh, it's that Tennessee dial-up.
No, it's not. Yeah, I have dial-up. Yeah. Good luck to you there, friggin' Northwoods. Anyway, those fish, when I was fishing in those conditions, were stacked up and then north of Yale Bridge. Up in the channel. Did really well with double Ds and really well with jointed depth raiders. And slowing down, right? Bomb cast. As you know, those tigers don't like, they don't like figure eights. So bomb casting it into the breaks. They're still up shallow. Biggest tiger I've ever seen in my life is on that lake, Jay. The one this dude's fishing. Thing was
very cool.
Freaking a beast. There's the boat ramp I came out of, like directly across from it, there's this flat, right? That comes up, little flat comes out, and there's like just a few little pieces of timber stumps on that thing, sort of beating around on it with a double D, and it was a serious fish. It was just absolutely giant and big by muskie standards, much less tiger standards. So jointed depth raiders, double D seem to really be the trick. The other thing that just absolutely drove those tigers nuts are the friggin' storm flat sticks.
Mm.
And they made, I don't know if they still make it, they made one that was a pink UV. It's like a white belly with like these sort of pinky flames on the back. And that just beat them to death. And the last time I was out there, it was 53, 54 degree water temps. Getting, like I said, I'm not trying to fish the inches of water. I'm fishing probably the first 5 feet of the shallows that are left over the break. So I'm bombing it in there, giving them plenty of time to overcome the bait, really focusing on mid-cast triggers. Okay. They're still going to be on the timber. And what a lot of people don't realize out there is some of these zones, I mean, there are redwood stumps, Jay.
Well, that's crazy.
A redwood stump that's the size of a freaking Volkswagen Beetle, okay? So you might need to get 6 or 7 casts on that one stump.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay. So good cast, strategic casts, and sort of just making sure that you're covering that area. The one thing I'll say is this, is my plan with tigers is really good slow action, but erratic action as much as I can. And then that last little bit before I'm getting close to the boat, before I think they're going to be turning off, I'm going to give them a little bit of heat because you don't have a chance boat side, right? They're not going to come in and eat in a figure eight. So you might as well just throw caution to the wind and just try to force his hand, right? That last 30 feet or whatever, 20 feet, but bomb cast it, man. That's one thing that I learned out there is just make sure I'm getting plenty of distance, make sure I'm making the right cast. So Double D, jointed depth raider. The one that was really killer for me was that Midnight Shiner, I think it's called, with the black back. And then the Storm Flat Sticks. Hopefully that helps. What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? Sorry it took me a second. I was trying to, there's two lakes out there I fish and didn't want to get them confused. Jason says, hi, I'm fishing a lake in Ohio during what I believe is turnover, right? He's got suspended fish. Long question here. So he's seeing bait fish in 20 feet of water. He's tried casting, you know, working bait slow, different size baits. I've trolled through them, different speeds. I can't get one in the bag. The fish, you know, he's jigging bondies. He said they're just sluggish. He's using live scope, so he's seeing them there. He's seeing them while he's jigging, he's trolling. He's getting some reactions, but he can't get any strike. He's looking for a ninja move that will help put one of these in the net. I'll tell you, it's what I sort of started the show with when we were talking that, man, the conditions have been so wild that sometimes it just takes a hunk of meat. You know, and I'm not Mr. Live mm-hmm. Bait by any means, but there's times when it depends on prefrontal, postfrontal more than anything. You know, I've sort of, for the last week, it's been, I know where they're at. No question. I know where they're at. But getting one to open its mouth and actually commit has been the hard part. And it, I mean, you know, if I'm prefrontal, like, you know, we got these storms rolling in today. It was magic. You know, you get in front of these warm fronts, the prefrontal, just like any time of the year, you get on the backside of these and these nasty early winter, late fall cold fronts, you're going to be in trouble. So just, you know,
yeah,
go to the dark side and get a sucker and put it down there. And I think you'll be shocked as to what will happen. I hate to say that, but if they're just being all over the map on you.
Yeah. You know, Jake Smith came in the other day, the son of Smitty. And we were talking about just that. And I asked him flat out, I said, what percentage? Because this guy guides basically every day. And he just finished up pretty much his whole guiding routine for the fall just ended, you know, a couple days ago. So he's kind of like taking a deep breath and exhaling. And he gave me a little recount on the fall. The fall bite, meaning like once live bait became really effective and the water started to cool down, whenever that was, I can't remember, you know, a good month ago or more. And he said roughly 50% of the fish he caught, muskies that he caught, were on suckers. And I said, how'd that relate to, you know, the previous few seasons? And he thought it was about the same or slightly less. Whether that has any impact for anybody, I don't know. But, you know, he said he's certainly using it and getting more effective bites, kind of just what you were talking about. You know, in that kind of cold front kind of situation where they become more sluggish, it's just like that's when he was picking up big fish on musky suckers.
Oh, I mean, you know, like I said, I've been watching them on, you know, I got all kinds of crazy electronics and watching them come in and swirling at baits.
It's got to be.
Oh, you want to freaking, you want to scream. You know, it's like you've done 99% of the work, but just get them to open your mouth. And if this guy's running live scope, he knows what I mean, where it's just like you can't get much closer than him sitting here and nudging the thing. You know, it just seems like that's the case this year. I've gotten texts from dudes and emails from a lot of dudes going, you know, what I need to do to just get them to convert. And it really boils down to the guys that are putting them in the boat. There seems to be a hunk of meat involved in some regard. It's, you know, it's not 100%. It might not be 50%, but for those days where they're just being obstinate, that seems to be the only trick there is. Oh goodness. And once you get out, the cool thing is this, once you sort of get out of that schlumpy stuff, you know, mm-hmm. you guys in Wisconsin are out of the schlump, if you will. It's not a slump. It's a schlump where it's just like, blech, right?
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, it was blech, right? They only eat suckers that do this. And then you get past these sort of mid temps, and then they sort of start to put the feed bag on a little bit. And then it turns into that trolling bite or that big bait bite. You know, so you just got to, you know, usually after Thanksgiving, it'll straighten you out for December if you still got open water where you're at. Rick, when can we expect 9-6 shield rods? Jay?
Well, it's looking like January.
Ooh.
I hope.
There you go.
There's so many delays on shipping. Yeah,
let's
who knows?
Be positive, January.
Yeah, you know, they've been trying to estimate. They were supposed to come in September, so things are just delayed.
Friggin'
yeah,
Titan.
We should be seeing them over the winter, so it'll be about the same time the Titan comes out.
Yeah, dude, Titans were supposed to be here in August, so yeah. People just can't help it. Tom, when I'm fishing timber, should I make constant contact with laydowns and standing timber? Or should I be approaching timber and laydowns from an outside perspective? How do you approach? Excuse me. Goodness gracious, that Pepsi just hit me hard. He said, oh, dying, Jay.
Oh, sure.
Just dying. He said, how should you approach timber and laydowns? Okay. Standing timber is its own animal in some regards. So let's look at a laydown. And a laydown for you northern guys is a tree that's laying down in the lake. So you most Jello Lakes, those up there have one, right? You got one. Here's the tree. You know, a lot of your southern reservoirs, they're just littered with them, right? You know, some of these bodies of water, you just have tons and tons of timber in them. It depends on how tightly knit they are. A lot of times you'll get timber that's so tight that it's just a thicket and you can't get through it. But let's take like one or two trees that have laid down from wind, storm, or something's knocked them down there. And it's a crankbait secrets thing. Booker's take on it was always that the most active fish is going to be sort of just barely on the inside branches, right? And his first move was to throw like left, center, right, or right, center, left, whatever, around like the perimeter, okay? So check the perimeter of that timber first is the most effective way. If you find a bite where you go, bang, I banged a fish off the outside of this timber, and then you can reproduce that throughout the day, your life is easy. But depending on activity levels and what their sort of their demeanor is for the day, sometimes they're laying against the trunk of that tree that are deep within those branches. And so the way I approach a piece of timber is I'll make the perimeter cast, the outside casts on it, right? Couple over here, couple in the center, couple on the other side. And then I'll proceed to pick through it tight with a bait that I know is going to run well in that, whether it be a dive and riser or a crank that I trust is not going to snag a bunch. And I've caught a lot of fish by that direct trunk cast, right? So let's say we got an oak tree or a poplar tree or whatever's laid over. I mean, there's just a litany of branches on the outside. Mm-hmm. But I've found once you get into where there's not as many branches and we're into the thick of the trunk, muskies will lay right under that mess. Now, it's dicey casting, right? You're going to lose baits. You're going to snag up. You need to use baits that you're comfortable with that are not super snaggy. I don't recommend fishing bulldogs in laydowns. You know, you're going to have a bad time. But, you know, like your slammers and titans, which dive and rise out of stuff really easier, and some of your baits that deflect off stuff, you got to get in there and sort of make some of those bold casts.
Yeah.
And like I said, check the outside. That's the easy pickup there on that outside. But don't be afraid to get in there and pick that individual tree apart and then move to the next. I'll tell you one thing when it comes to that deal is rarely are the fish like coming deep from under the trunk. Does that make any sense? Usually they're like right under the trunk of the tree or a dominant branch. Okay. So you don't have to run anything deep. It can be crummy conditions and you can get a crane bait or a shallow raider in there and get bit. Because they'll use the shade of that tree just like they would for, you know, from weeds or whatever kind of cover that they're using. So you don't have to use something that's running really deep and get yourself in a mess throwing into it is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so pick it apart. Another thing that people don't do much and is effective is jigging around the end of trees. Jigging the outside of a lay down can be pretty good. I'm just going to leave it at that.
So, sure, sure.
You know, it's not something that's done too terribly often. All right. Tyson, what is the right size trolling motor for big water? I have an 18-foot Lund. Should I run a 100 plus or an 80? Ooh. What do you think, Jay? I know my answer.
Yeah, if you can afford it. Always max bigger. It out. I mean, yeah. Go 100 because there is probably going to be times where that 80 might not have enough juice. Not to mention, you know, I mean, you can troll with it too. I don't know what you got set up there, you know, with an outboard, but, you know, like we were talking, I think last week we were talking about your secret musky Bama technique in winter speed and winter trolling. It's just like get that bad boy down to about 0.4 or just barely trickling. You got fish on that last week, didn't you?
Yeah.
More
than a 0.8, 0.9, yeah.
Perfect for trolling motor. It's hard to get an outboard to go down that slow. So
I'd say
go with 100 if you can swing it.
Yeah, I think there's 100 or 112, whatever, depending on what, you know, if we're going motor guide or hummingbird or whatever. The bigger you can get, the only thing that happens there is like now we have 24 and 36 volt motors. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a question. Make sure you have room for three deep cycles. You know, and don't go with like three of the smallest deep cycles. You want to have room for like three big deep cycle batteries somewhere, and take it from somebody that has six batteries in their boat. Dude.
Yeah,
I know. It's just like I got friggin' lithium batteries. I got cameras. You know, I'm basically running a small video production thing on the boat while we're out there fishing every day. It's crazy. So.
Yeah.
Make sure you have the battery space. That's one thing, dude. I will bring up. I've been, and a lot of people have asked about it over the years and asked about lithium batteries. Pretty amazing, to be honest with you. They're expensive as all get out, but man, do they last. And it's, I haven't switched everything over to it, but goodness gracious, you can get the power you can get out of a small little lithium battery is amazing. If you're having any like electronic draw issues or anything, it's good stuff. So just to keep in mind. So anyway, Jay, I have to get up super early. Folks, like I said, we're a day late because I felt like crap. I muddled through it. It is the best Freddie Mercury outboard Palmero song I've ever heard at the top here. Next week, we're going to come back with something amazing.
Something unusual.
Say goodnight, Jeff.
Musky pressure.
Later, guys.
Later.
I want a Titan. Musky pressure. Working jerk baits. Musky pressure. 360 podcast. Musky pressure. Burning bucktails. Musky pressure. Ripping rubber. Musky pressure.
Okay. Beautiful.